from Mitzia Daf Mem Dalad. We're starting from the Mishnah on the bottom of Mem Gimel Amud Beis. We're talking about Shlichus Yad. Shlichus Yad is when someone is watching a deposit, and instead of guarding it the way he should, in the middle he decides, you know what, let me just lay my hand on this and take it for myself, or take a portion of it for myself. So halacha is that when you're shalecha, when you lay your hand to take something for yourself, so you become like a thief on the entirety of the item, and you're chayef obviously for any accidents or any liability which comes. So the Mishnah discusses the case, what if you only thought about it? Meaning he declared, he says he's going to do it, but he didn't actually do anything. He didn't pick it up, he didn't do anything. So Bishami or Mukhayev, no, from the moment that he declares that he's going to use it for himself, he's already liable at that point for anything that will happen. So Omrim Eino Chayev HaShish V'Riyah. No, it has to be actually, Shalichus Yad actually has to lay his hand on it physically. Shinamar Im Lo Shalach Im Lachas Re'eu. That implies more than just intent. What is required there is actually sending his hand. Another halacha, he does a chavetz. Let's say he tilts a keg of wine, meaning he's been given a whole keg of wine. And instead of, the big idea here is that within the view of Beis Hillel, you need to make a kinyan, right? You need to do some sort of action that acquires it for yourself. So here, if he tilts the keg of wine that was given to him, not the revius, and he's taking out a revius of wine, vinishra, and then later the whole keg breaks. In Mishnah, the revius only pays for the revius of wine. He's not responsible for the rest of the keg. Why? What's the pshat? Normally, shalichus yad, when you take from some of it, you're liable on all of it. The answer is you never did an act of kinyan on the whole thing. However, in contrast, if you picked up the whole keg, so that's an act of kinyan on the whole keg, and then you take revius from a vinishra, and then it breaks mishnah to kula, then you have to pay for the entire value. Because there, again, even though he only took a revius, but since he was shalech yad on all of it, with intent to use some of it for himself, but he did a kinyan on all of it, he was shalech on all of it, so now then he becomes liable for the entirety. It's only in the ratio where he didn't do an act of kinyan, he just tilted it, so that's not an act of kinyan to take out a revius, so then he's only liable for the revius. Says the Gemara. First question, how do we know this? So what's the question? We want to understand better the dispute between Bisham and Bisil. The question is, if a person is not actually laying his hand on a deposit, but he's only intending, he's only declaring, so what is the halacha? So it says in the Raisa, Kol Divar Pesha, for every Divar Pesha, for every matter of negligence. So Divar is the word that we're looking at. What is that? Coming to tell us that even for his dvar pesha, for a matter of negligence, meaning a speech, a declaration of negligence, even before he lays his hand physically on it, even just for the dvar pesha, he's already liable. No, it's not true. He's not liable until he actually lays his hand. Says the Gemara, counters to Beisil. You know, what do you do with my pasuk? It says dvar. So I'm Beisil v'shama. Yeah, but look at my pasuk. Halok var ama nemar emlo shalach yadom lachas reyo. So it says shalach yado. Clearly, we're talking, you need actually shlichus yad. So what's the pshat? And came out to Malama called dvar pesha. Finally, we're going to get the answer. Sheyacho in the elohu. You would say it's only if he did it. Amar la'ad v'shluch v'nayin. Let's say someone instructs someone else to do it on their behalf, right? Tells the servant, his agent, you go lay your hand on it, go get it for me. How do I know you're liable? Normally, what do we say? Ein shlichos l'dvar aver. It's funny, we've learned, I think, more exceptions than we see the rule. Remember, we had that by slaughtering a cow that you stole. The halacha is that even if you instruct somebody else to do it on your behalf, you're chayav 4 or 5. The idea is that there's shlichos for that sin. So here's another exception. There's shlichos for the sin of shlichus yad. It's a little bit confusing because you're using the word shlichus twice, but shlichus here means agency. Like if I tell my agent to do it, to lay his hand on it for me, it's as if I've done it. Tamalomar kol dvar pasha. And the way we say that is because of every matter, every speech, every declaration. So you're getting that declaration by telling someone else to do it for you. So then you're getting that declaration. Okay, second part of the Mishnah. He does a chavis. Let's say he tilts the keg of wine and he takes a revius. Amar rabba l'shana nishbara. This halacha, it's only where it was breaking. In other words, what do we mean this halacha? This halacha that if I tilted it as opposed to picking it up, so then I'm only liable for the revius that I took out, but not for the whole thing. That's specifically where afterwards the keg was broken. So if the keg's broken afterwards, so that's an accident. So that's not, you know, anything that's directly from the fact that I tilted the keg before. So then that would only be liable to shlichus yad, and I didn't do a kinyan on all of it, so I'm not liable for all of it. That's the case in the Mishnah. Let's say afterwards, the keg turns into vinegar. That Mishnah is cool, you pay for all of it. My time, what's the reason you have to pay for more than you took? Again, you just tilted it. You didn't do a kinyan. Why are you liable for an accident? Had it turned into vinegar, it's not my fault. The answer is, my time, his arrows caused the wine to sour. What's the pshat? Because you took the revius of wine. We actually view that as you shooting arrows into the wine and helping it turn into vinegar. Why is that? Because wine will sour easier when the container is not full. It's very interesting. Wine needs to be stored in full containers. The more air, whatever it is, the easier it is for it to sour and turn into vinegar. So now, when you remove some of the wine, the shomer is actually causing the rest of the sour and is considered his arrows, and therefore he is liable. Interesting question to think about. Do you think that's considered, you know, a direct maisa mazik? Is that the way of understanding it? Back to Baba Kama, if I go over to your barrel and I take out a revius and the rest of it sours, do you think I'm chayv to pay for the whole value of your wine? Is that what's going on? Or is this specific within the parasha of Shlichas Yad, where normally you need a kinyan, and we're saying here, but if you took out a revius and the revius shot its arrows at the rest, then you're liable at the rest, but specifically within that frame of the person who had taken revius for himself? You have to think about it. All right. If you have an other revia, if you picked up the whole thing, you took revias, and then later it broke, he pays for the whole thing because he had made a kinyan. Amar Shmuel lo not don't know mamish. When it says he took, it doesn't mean he even literally took the revias. Like human shake vialitol. As soon as he lifted up the keg with intent to take from the wine, apple pishul lo not, even though he didn't take from the wine. So again, we definitely need, just to clarify, this is not peishama. He definitely has to pick up the keg, right? It's not like, oh, just thought to misuse it makes you liable. Of course, it's only because you picked up the keg. But the question is, did I actually take out the revias yet? So the Mishnah implied is when I take out the revias that I'm a shaleich yad, Shmuel seems to be saying, even if I haven't taken it, but once I pick up the keg with the intent to take the wine, then even before I took the wine, I'm liable. Says the Gemara, didn't we have this issue a couple days ago? Lemak of Sabra Shmuel, Shlichas Yad, Ein Hatzrich Chisaron. It sounds like Shmuel holds, Shlichas Yad does not require a loss. So in other words, he's liable before he causes any direct loss to the wine in the keg. Because all he did was pick up the barrel thinking he's going to take out a revius. He didn't actually cause a loss. Didn't we have a machlokas about that? One opinion was saying, Rabba, that Shlichas Hatzrich Chisaron, you're only liable when you've caused a loss. You're only liable on all of it when the part that you've taken has caused, like you've taken it, you've caused a loss to the owner. As the Gemara, Amri lo, it's not the Pshash. Well, maybe he holds, it is dependent upon a loss. But Shani Hachas, different here. Because actually, the Shomer wants the whole keg of wine to be boss is la revius, a holder for that revius, a wine that he wants to remove. Meaning, he wants the revius, and he wants it to be stored with the rest of it until he's ready to remove it, because it's better preserved in the full container, as we said. So therefore, you know what it really is like? It's like he took out the revius and put it back in there for storage. Fascinating idea. We're basically saying, By a keg, so if I just plan on taking out a revius in the future, stam, like, okay, that would make sense. There's no chisaron. But we're saying, no, it's much more than that. When you plan on taking out chisaron, what's really happening, if we think about what you're doing, you really did take it out. You just, it's as if you put it back in. Because the reason you didn't actually take it out is because just you want it stored better that way. So when a person plans on taking out a revius, what really happened is he really caused the chisaron, and he really took out the revius, and he really already took it for himself. The way he's storing it is by keeping it in the original barrel. So it's just, he doesn't take it out and put it back in. It's just, he just plans, okay, that revius is for me. But it's tantamount to him taking it out and putting it back into regularly. If I stomach a kinyan, I be in my thought to use it. That's not chayv until I make a chisaron. Like we had before, remember the case like where someone put a stick on top of an animal. So that's not a chisaron. So that wouldn't be a shaleich yad. But over here specifically, where you're storing wine, then we understand the reason you didn't actually take it out is because you wanted to come out and go right back in. So therefore, that is considered as if you have done that and you've been in shaleich yad at that point. So that's the Gemara, similar question. What if a person, a shomer, has been given a purse of coins? So he picks it up thinking, I'm going to take out one coin. What's the halacha? Is he responsible for the whole purse immediately or not? So is it chamer d'lometer elagav chamer? Perhaps it's only wine. Wine is kept better together with other wine. So that there we have that svar that it's as if you took the revius and you're just throwing it together with the rest of the wine. Avol zuza, but with regard to a coin mintar, you could guard one coin by itself. So if you just plan on taking out one coin, that's nothing. If you would actually take out the coin and cause a loss, then you would be a shaleich yad on the whole purse. But if you just plan to take out, then not. Odoma, maybe we say no. Shani tirusa d'arniki. Watching a purse full of coins is different. Tirusa dinner from watching a single coin. It's actually more secure in a full purse. Why? Rashi explains it's more noticeable and secure. It's much harder to lose a wallet and it is to lose $1, right? That kind of idea. So therefore, maybe it's actually more secure when you pick up the wallet, planning on taking out one coin, you should be liable for the whole purse, even if you didn't remove the coin. And the Gemara finishes on that. Okay, cool. We finish with that. That is a shayla. So bottom line is, we have a machlokes b'sham v'sil. Shaleach, Shlichas Yad. B'shamai says, Rechav, even Machshava v'sil says, no, you need a maisa. You need a kinyan. The question is, what sort of kinyan? I pick up, I need to make a kinyan, I'm an as to use it. The question is, if it needs a loss, it seems to be we favor the side, you need a loss. But there are certain cases where it's as if I took it out and put it back in, like planning on taking out the revias or planning on taking out the one coin from the purse. Okay. Now, when we start this new parak, it's very important to understand olden times a currency. So they used to have different currencies. They'd have currency, you know, with a whole coin, with an image, so on and so forth, of copper, silver, and gold. That's the way it worked. And really, in the market, it wasn't like official rules. It was kind of like whatever worked, it worked, right? You could do that. You could barter with one another. But there's also a concept of currency. So here's the key. Halacha is when you make a kinyan on the tavlin, And you're, so how does it work? When do I become the owner? Let's say I'm buying fruit and I'm paying for it. How do I become the owner? I do not become the owner when I pay. Paying in halacha does not make me acquire. What makes me acquire is when I do the meshicha. When I pull an item. Okay, that's basically the idea, is when I pull the item. The meshicha is the way that it works. So now what happens? So that's very simple when I'm buying fruit and money, right? What's gonna happen? If Reuven says, I'll sell you fruits, let's keep it very simple. Reuven says, Shimon, I'll sell you my fruits. What's the price? Shimon agrees, $30. I'm going to buy the fruits. As soon as Shimon pulls the fruits, they're locked into that deal. So that means Shimon is the owner of the fruits, and that means that Reuven now is owed the $30 from Shimon. They can no longer, nothing can back up. But let's say it would be the other way, just to give an example. Let's say he gave him the $30 first. They could still back out. The deal is not final. He could get his $30 back and back out of the deal and not follow through and to buy the fruits. It's all about the meshicha of the fruit, of the item that's being acquired, not the currency, not the thing that's being paid. So that's always very simple. It's like very nice and very clean and simple. You always have to make the kinyan, the meshicha, and the item that's being acquired, and then the payment is not the thing that is making the kinyan. That's all simple. But what happens if you're exchanging two currencies? Then it gets complicated. So let's say I have one golden coin that's worth, 25 silver coins, and we're saying, well, let's make a deal. I'll give you one golden coin, you give me 25 silver coins. In that scenario, how does it work? Which one is paying for what? Which one is the currency and which one is the payros in that scenario? They're both hard to. So that's what the Mishnah picks up on, right into the depth of that question. What is the payros? What's the merchandise and what is the currency? And then Afkamina, again, pulling one, when one takes one, it's going to lock in the deal. Which one is it? The one that you pull the currency, that's not going to lock it in. It's pulling the merchandise. We have to know which one is the merchandise. So the Gemara says, Azov Kones HaKasef. When there's an exchange with gold and silver, so pulling the gold will acquire the silver. Hakasif and Okasazov, but taking of the silver will not acquire the gold. What does that mean? What's the Mishnah ruling? Which one is the merchandise? That means the gold is the merchandise. The silver is the currency. That's what the Mishnah is saying. So therefore, when there's the taking of the gold, so you pulled the merchandise, that locks in now liability to pay the silver. But the opposite, if a party takes the silver, all he's taken is the money. So that does not lock in the deal. Then they could still retract from the deal and say, actually, we're not going to follow through. So as Zov Kodos, I guess if gold acquires silver, that's a fancy way of saying that gold is the merchandise. So pale pulling of the gold, therefore, locks in the deal. Now you're going to be obligated to pay the silver. Silver is the currency. Says the Gemara, what about an exchange with copper and silver? And a chosh is konas akasef. So the copper is the merchandise, silver is the currency. So what have we basically seen? That silver is the premium sort of currency. The other things, copper and gold, even though in and of themselves they may be currency, but relative to silver, they are not currency. And that's where things get a little bit complex, is that currency is relative. That's what's so cool about this concept in the economics. You could use in the market golden coins. You could use in the market copper coins. So why aren't they currency? The answer is relative to silver. In a transaction with silver, when we line them up one for the other, we're going to see the silver as the currency and the gold and the copper as being the merchandise. And therefore, the kinyan is going to be effective only on the gold or the copper and not on the silver. Okay, now we continue with a similar concept. Let's say there's an exchange for bad coins and good coins. So interesting, you know, what's a bad coin, what's a good coin? So we'll have to see exactly what that is. Like sometimes you have ones that have been disqualified. They're not, you know, in circulation by the authorities. So therefore, relative to good coins, they can be considered the merchandise. Just to understand, you know, there could be, the mindset you could use them. They're not valueless. That's what's funny about the economics. Like they're just not, you know, mandated, authorized, and therefore it's harder to get them through in business. But so the better coins, obviously, are the currency. The worst coins are the merchandise. Asimon, let's say you have Asimon. Asimon is that it's missing, and it's not minted. It's just a metal disc ready for minting, but it's not yet. It doesn't have the imprint of the image yet. So there, that's going to be the merchandise relative to the regular currency. Then we have the regular basic rule. Whenever there's a sale of movables, so the movables will acquire the coins will not acquire the movables. I'm selling you fruit. When you take the fruit, that locks in the deal. I have to pay the money, but that I'm owed the money, but not the other way. Then you have another idea. You could have a totally different halacha. You could have a halacha that two movables can acquire one another. In other words, you could barter for one another. This is not a kinyan, you're doing kesef at all. It's not that I'm buying your fruit for money. There's no, it's not a deal with money, but rather it's, you know, you want to give me the fruit, and I need to give you some silk, you know, some cloth, some shmatas, and we're going to maybe barter for one another. I'll give you 5 shmatas for 20 bushels of apples, you know, like something like that. So barters, so that's interesting. That's another halacha. That's called kinyan chalipin, exchange. That's not the way, just understand, that's not the way it works when you have currency. Currency is not, it doesn't work It doesn't work as chalipin. That's not the pshat. Taka doesn't work. The way it works is a different thing. When you make a mashikha on the merchandise, then the deal is locked in. You have to pay the money. But the other way around, if I grab the money, it doesn't work. That's because I'm dealing with currency. Here you're dealing with tchotchkes. You're dealing with metal. You're dealing with bartering for this. Five that for 30 of these. There, this halacha, kin chalipin, koine zuazu, they acquire one another. As soon as one party takes either one, then the deal is locked in and the other one becomes the owner of the other. So now the Mishnah illustrates some of these halachas. Ketzad, mashal, konves, mashal, mamos. Let's say I'm buying produce from someone. So he does a mashicha. The buyer pulls the fruit, but he hasn't given money. No one can go back. Because as soon as you take the merchandise, that finalizes, makes binding the transaction. But the opposite way, let's say a buyer gave the seller the money, but didn't yet take the produce. Each one can go back because it's not finalized. So, but however, even though we're saying that when you pay for something, the deal is not locked in, Abu Amr, the Chachamim said, let's say you pay for something and then the seller backs out. He says, actually, take your money back. I'm not selling you. We say, that the God who punished the people of the generation of the flood and the generation of the Dar Flug who built the tower, he'll also punish the person who doesn't abide by his word. So you're a bad person. It's like you have to like accept a curse. If you want, so seller can back out of the deal even if after he's gotten the money, since the buyer hasn't yet taken the merchandise. But there's like a curse which is given to him. Now we have Reb Shimon's view. Reb Shimon Omer, whoever had the money in his possession, he has the upper hand. So what does that mean? He's talking about the case where someone pays for something, but he hasn't yet received the merchandise. So Tanakama holds both parties can back out of the deal. Reb Shimon seems to be saying that the seller is holding the money. He has the upper hand. He could back out. It sounds like the buyer, though, once he's paid, he cannot back out. And the Gemara will explain what the rationale of Reb Shimon is. We'll get into that. All right. So what was the opening yisoid of the Mishnah? When I have gold against silver, they're both currency, maybe independently, but relative to one another. When you're switching gold coins for silver coins, what is the currency and what is the merchandise? The merchandise is the gold. The currency is the silver. Therefore, taking the gold locks in the deal, but taking the silver would not lock in the deal. So Masin, the Rebbe Shimon Berei, Rebbe taught the Mishnah to Reb Shimon his son. The way we have it, that the gold acquires the silver, meaning that the taking of the gold is what locks in the deal because the gold is the merchandise and the silver is the currency. Reb Shimon said, Rabbi, my teacher, when you were younger, you taught us the Mishnah with the opposite girsa, exact opposite. The silver acquires the gold, that the silver is the merchandise, and the taking of the silver acquires the gold, that the gold is the currency. Now you're flipping. What's going on? You're forgetting something in your old age. Now you're teaching that the gold is the merchandise. So the Gemara explains that Rebbe actually had retracted his opinion. There was a flip-flop here in the understanding of what is a coin, one relative to the other. What did the rationale change? When he was younger, he held the gold, which is more valuable, that's the variable in currency. Now we're going to get into what defines something as currency more than something else. Again, they can both be used as the market. They're both minted. They both have images. But what defines it more as a chasha currency? So when he was younger, he said, the more valuable something is, the better currency it is. Whereas silver, which is less valuable, so then relative to gold, it will be the merchandise, not the currency. Therefore, taking the silver produce acquires the gold money. That was what he thought when he was younger. But then our Mishnah comes along and teaches the opposite. He said, when he got older, Safar, he held kaspa, top of the base, decharif. But my saw it's sharper. What does it mean it's sharper? Rashi explains, it's easier in circulation. People have more silver in their pockets than they do with gold. Sometimes you might not want an item of greater value when you're a seller because you're doing commerce. Commerce needs accessibility with cash, with coins. I prefer having more silver in my pocket than having a one golden coin. Today we don't live with this. Everything is so hard for us to imagine. But back in the day, business was done with coins and change, and everything could be very important when you're doing a deal. So that variable, we're closer, becomes more important. The charifas, the sharp, how current it is more important. Whereas the Ava, the low charif, Ava Pir, Kano the Pir, the Teva. So there's actually a flip-flop in gold versus silver, but the maskana is our Mishnah that the silver is the currency and the gold is the merchandise. Why? Because we go after how sharp it is. Ravashi says that actually the way the Girsi had when he was younger, that makes more sense. We should go the opposite. Now it seems like the opening line of the Mishnah was not clear what the Girsa is, the gold versus the silver. But the rest of the Mishnah was. Why? So what did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah went on to say, Anachoshes Kones HaKasef, that copper acquires silver, but not vice versa. Silver is considered money relative to copper. After the whole, whatever the gold and the silver is, that's the mess. We don't know what the correct Girsa is. But after it said that, certainly it said that copper relative to silver, copper is the merchandise, and silver is the currency. So yeah, if you would go the way we taught when Rebbe was younger, that gold is that silver is the produce, is the merchandise, and the gold is the currency. Then we can understand why it's necessary for the Mishnah to tell me that the copper acquires the silver. Even though relative to gold, we're saying silver is the produce. That's the opening line in the Mishnah, like Rebbe when he was younger. But relative to copper, it's still considered money. So therefore, it's not extra. It's a huge chiddush. We just said that's relative to gold, silver is produce. Now we have to say, but relative to copper, silver is the currency. But if we go the way we have the gear, so the way actually it's in here, like Rebbe in his older years, that silver, even relative to gold, is currency. If we're saying silver is currency even relative to gold, despite the fact that gold is more chashev, we still go with silver being currency. Then certainly relative to copper, silver should be currency. What does the Gemara mean? What do we mean certainly? And therefore, we're bothered. Why was it even necessary for the Mishnah to say it? Because first of all, silver is more valuable. And second of all, it's super sharp. It's super current. So once I know that silver is currency over gold, even though gold is more chashev, but silver is currency that wins, silver is the currency because it is somewhat valuable and it is more charif. So certainly in regard to copper, where it's more chashev and it's more charif, then certainly it should be there. So why would the Mishnah find it necessary to say that silver is currency relative to copper once it said that silver is currency relative to gold? Must be it's approved that silver relative to gold if silver is actually the merchandise. Says the Mar, no, it is true. Really, it's like Rebbe said in when he was younger. Really, silver to gold, silver is the merchandise. The gold is the currency. Why was it necessary? Really, it's like Rebbe in his old age, and silver is currency relative to gold. Then what's the chiddush that silver is currency relative to copper? So that I would say like this. Hani Priti, if you think about the copper coins, Ba'asri Desagya, where they do circulate in the Chabifat in the Kaspa. Not everyone loves using copper. Some people say it's too small. But where they use it, it actually circulates even more than silver. Imativa, which should say it's taka money relative to the silver coin. Yeah, in certain places, the copper is more charif even than the silver. But there are a lot of places where they don't use the copper coins much at all. So therefore, Pirahave is always considered produce relative to silver. So basically, we're saying like this. The main variable in being a currency, the most important variable, is how much it circulates, how sharp it is. Copper is complex because in certain locations where it circulates, it actually circulates even more than silver. But in other locations, it doesn't circulate much. So therefore, overall, we're going to go with silver being a better currency. So listen to the variables. Gold is more, doesn't circulate much, but gold is more valuable. The Maisa, we're coming out that that's not such an important variable. It's how much it circulates that is more important. And this, therefore, the Maskana, silver is more of a currency than gold. Now, what about between silver and copper? Where it circulates, copper circulates more. No, the Maisa circulation has to be at a base. And since you're not always guaranteed to have circulation with copper, silver is the currency relative to it as well. That's the give and take here. Now, the hard question we should be trying to deal with, and we can't tell from learning the Mishnah, what about between copper and gold? That's an interesting question. If there's still in copper and gold. So, you have to know. You think about different variables. So that's a machlokes. But I'll call upon him, silver is the currency relative to gold, like Rebbe in his old age, and it's the currency relative to copper. Says the Gemara of Avra Pchiyo Sabat Avateva. Now we're going to get thrown into Ezu Neshekre, Mamish into Ribbis, right away. The Gemara says that we have a Raya that Rebbe also holds that gold is considered money relative to silver coin, meaning like Rebbe held in his youth, not like our Mishnah, that the real currency is the gold. Why? Let's just understand a very important point before we start. If I borrow $100 from you, pay back $100, that's beautiful. If I borrow $100 and I pay $120, that's not good. That's what we call ribbis, right? You're not allowed to do that. What happens if the market deflates? Meaning, I borrowed $100 and I pay back $100, but there's more buying power with my $100 today. So we always hear about inflation. What about if there would be deflation? Okay, so my $100 when you pay back can buy more. Is that a problem with ribbis? The answer is a big fat no. There is zero problem with that. Why? Because that's what currency is. Halacha does not care about buying power. Get this through your mind, every economic major. Don't throw out a lot of what you learned. The definition of value is not what you can buy. It's in how much of the currency exists. That's the Torah perspective. So if it's $100 and I pay you back $100, I don't care that the market deflates. I only gave you $100. That's a clerk. Now what happens if it's not currency though? Let's say you give me 100 apples. And on the market, 100 apples are worth $5. And you pay me back 100 apples, and they're worth $6. You know what that's a problem of? That's a straight-up problem of ribbis. Everyone chapa's an amazing thing. You give me $100, and it deflates, and now you give me $100. That's not a problem with $100. That's because it's a dollar. It's a currency. It's the same thing. It's the Zelbazach. But if you give me a value, produce, a merchandise, and it has different value later, that's called ribbis. Okay, that's, you have to have understand that coming in. So what happened here? Someone borrowed gold from his daughter, Lasovia Akadini, and then the value of the gold dinners appreciated, meaning gold dinners could buy more later than they had at the time of the loan. So is that a shiloh from ribbis? So what does that depend on? What that depends on is gold the ultimate currency? If gold is the ultimate currency, it's not a bayah. But if gold is not the ultimate currency, it's really silver that's the ultimate currency, and really gold is a merchandise sort of entity, then it would be a problem. So he said, no problem. Gold pay full dinners, meaning it's not an issue. If you say that gold is the ultimate currency shopper, then it's good because it's paying back the same amount of currency. But if gold really has an aspect of being merchandise, it's like lending someone a saw of grain and being repaid with a saw of grain, which is forbidden. If the price would go up, that's mamish a problem of ribbis. And it's so bad that the rabbi said you can't even lend l'chatchila. You're not even allowed to do that. I can't even lend you five bushels of apples, and the deal is you'll pay me back. Even before the price rises, you're not even allowed to do it l'chatchila. Because think about it, next time you give your neighbor an egg, how are you ever allowed to give your neighbor an egg? You pay me back an egg tomorrow. Are you allowed to do that? Pashas, it's asur. It's a new kula between neighbors, whatever. But it's forbidden. You even asur to lend it because of the fact there might be fluctuations in price. So how are they lending out golden coins, expecting golden coins back? That's mamash sabah saw. You're not allowed to do that. Says the Gemara, no, Rav didn't have it. Rav already had the gold dinners in his possession when he borrowed some from Rabbi's daughter. Listen to this idea. He wasn't borrowing money that he didn't have to pay back. He had it already in his possession. He bought the dinners since he had gold dinners of his own. It's like he said, lend to me until my son comes, or lend to me until I find my key. Meaning, really, it is merchandise. And Sabasan normally is also. You can't give merchandise expecting more merchandise back. And because of the possibility, it will go up. But that's all usher when you don't have what in your possession when you borrow to pay back. But if you have in your possession what to pay back, you just need it because you don't have access to it. Oh, I have to wait for the key. Right now, I don't have the key, so lend me. It's mutter. Why is it mutter? Because when the person lends the money and gives it to you, they automatically acquire right now what you have. That's the way it works. Normally, I lend you money. You don't have what to pay me back with. So then when you come and you pay me back, when it's worth more, that would be ribbis. But if you give me the merchandise, you give me five bushels of apples, and I have the five bushels of apples in currently when I borrow it, so there's not a problem if it goes up. Because when you gave me the five bushels of apples, you automatically right then acquired the five bushels of apples in my possession. Now you're going to ask, how did you acquire it? What kenyan did you do? How does that work? So you have to learn Eizu Neshek for that. The short answer is that we learned that there was, as soon as you pay for something, there's a curse to back out, and that's enough that midrabanan, we could see it all, ki'ilu, you became the owner of the thing as in possession. So really, gold, we're saying, is merchandise. He lent him the gold's house, and what's to pay him back the golden coins? Look, they have more buying power. His mama should be spitz ribbis. How are you doing that? The answer is because he had the gold coins in his possession. The borrower had it right then. They was just inaccessible to him. So the lender acquired those gold coins as soon as he gave it. That Gemara hopefully was tough, but that's because we haven't learned Ezun Ashrach yet. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav, Hai Tana Sava Dava Tiva, we're going to show that this Tana old gold coin is considered money relative to silver. Like Rebbe in his youth. Tanya says in a Brisa, Pruta Sha'amru, what is a Pruta? Pruta is Echel Mishpon B'Ser Italki, 1/8 of Italian Isser, meaning a Pruta is a copper coin, right? That's we're saying, how much is a Pruta? What do you mean, whatever a Pruta is? We're saying, no, it's not whatever a Pruta is. A Pruta is 1/8, as it has to have the value of 1/8 of Italian Isser. What do we mean by that? You know what the Italian Isser is. That's the currency. That's the constant. You always have to remember this. The currency does not change. There is no such thing as a change in currency, okay? So you have the Italian Isser, right, Gishmak. So that's the 1/8 that's there. And 1/8 of that is what a pruta is. The mind of Kedusha for even college woman. We always say you need a pruta. So what if in your time, one pruta does not get you the value of 1/8 of an Italian Isser? Then that's not enough for Kedushin. What do you mean? I'm giving a pruta. The answer is a pruta is 1/8 of Italian Isser. A pruta is a certain value. Yes, it could be in copper form, but it has to have the value relative to the currency. It has to be 1/8 of an Italian Isser. As Isser is Echel Mishmona Abar Zoy Dekeser. An Isser is 1/24 of a silver dinner. So these are two types of silver, one relative to the other. So in Israel, it's be 1/24 of a silver dinar. If you're making an exchange between them, and there's halacha, no, you can't rip off one another. You always have to remember, you know, there's halacha. If it's more than a sixth, the whole thing is batel. So you have to know what the right ratio is. Israel is 1/24 of a silver dinar. That's not really relevant to us. That's two things of silver, one to the other. Now, here's the bigger issue. Here we go. Dinner show kasef, dinner shows off. A silver dinner. What is a silver dinner? It's not in and of itself, because silver is not the real currency. You want to know what silver dinner is? It's relative to gold. It's 1/25 of a gold dinner, meaning 25 silver coins by the one golden coin. So if I want to know what a dinner is, it's 1/25 of the gold dinner. Now, what does that mean? That means that silver's fluctuation will always be the merchandise fluctuating relative to the currency. The merchandise always fluctuates relative to the currency. So therefore, if I know that I need a certain amount, I need to pay a certain amount of value, I always have to see how much it is relative to the gold. It's relative for pinyin aben. So here we go. What does the Torah say? How much do you have to give for pinyin aben? 5 silver shekel. The reality is, the Torah, now hearing what the Gemara is saying, is a chiddush neiro. It's not really an amount of silver. 5 silver shekel does not always guarantee you that you're pinyin aben. It only works when it's in the ratio of giving 5 silver shekel coins, when those shekel coins have that ratio of 1 to 25, that one golden coin buys you at 25 silver coins. But let's say it is not that way. The value of silver for fluctuates. What the Torah is saying is that what the Torah is really saying when it says 5 shekel, just to understand, 5 shekel into dinner, 5 shekel will get you 20 dinner. In other words, each shekel is 4 dinner. So what the Torah is really saying is 4/5 of a golden dinner is pinyin aben. Even though we frame it as 5 shekel, listen how confusing it is. It's not 5 shekel. It's 4/5 of a golden dinner. That's the amount. I don't care what the price is of silver relative to gold, because silver is the fruit, it's the merchandise. It's about having 4/5 of a golden coin. That's the idea. You have pinyin aben. If gold is the currency, then everything's good. That's what's going on. That's what we're giving you the fixed value. You got to know it's always about 4/5 of the golden coin. If the gold is the produce relative to the silver, then it's no good. It's not 4/5 of gold. Why would the Tana give the amount and something that of gold that goes up and goes down? Sometimes you'll have to give change. The coin will have to give change back. Sometimes the father will have to add more for the coin. Meaning, what happens if the price would... What happened if the price would change? There could be a huge difference. Let's say, you can get with the price of silver, it's 20. It's 20 to gold. What if it's 30 to gold? Will you make a huge difference if in the silver it's not changing, but rather in the gold is changing? So, if you tell me that it's always changing in the silver because the gold is the currency, then it's very good. That's what we're saying. It's always 4/5 of the golden dinner. But if you tell me it's in the silver, it's not going to make sense. We see that the gold is the money relative to silver. Shema mina. That's what we conclude from here. And that's such an important difference. How do we paskin? Now we just realized, the beginning of the Mishnah, you thought off, you're thinking about something so abstract. Halacha l'maisa. When you're being potent, what do you want to know? You want to know, so first of all, you have to know the weight of the olden dinners so that you know what the price of silver is. But am I looking at a price of silver on the market? Am I looking at a price of gold on the market? Am I trying to figure out what is 4/5 of a golden dinner and paying that to the Kohen in a market? By the way, you can be potent as a ben with anything, even Shavuot Kesef. But it has to be 4/5 of the value of golden dinner, or is it 20 silver coins, irrespective of this. In other words, it matters the price of the silver, however many, whatever you figure it out in grams, how much silver that is. So like Rebbe in the youth, and like over there, it's an amount of gold of value that we care about. Like Rebbe was like, say we care about the value of silver. So it's a huge, huge, huge nafkamina that we have to look at going forward. Okay, we'll stop here for today.